Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop,
it's our fall television special. We're talking about the can't-miss shows of the new TV season, and we're making some big, bold Emmy predictions with TV producer and pop culture expert extraordinaire Norman Baker.
Plus, the R&B group composed of twin sisters that should be in all of your playlists right now on Inside Pop.
What's up? I'm Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel, and this is Inside Pop, your deep dive inside the world of pop culture.
Quick note, if you are an Apple Podcast user, head on over to iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review, let the world know how you feel about Inside Pop. We appreciate it.
All right, well, we'll head right into our episode this week. We are talking about fall television. New TV shows coming out for the fall season, and of course, predictions for the Emmy Awards.
Who better to talk to us about this than our special guest, Mr. Norman J. Baker?
Hi, guys. Hi.
Hey.
I'm so excited.
We're so happy to have you on the show.
I'm finally part of the Inside Pop podcast.
Yay!
It's been a long time in the making, this guest appearance. So let's tell the people who you are. Norman is currently the senior producer at The Wendy Williams Show. But in addition, since I've known Norman since 2004, when we worked together at VH1's Best Week Ever, Norman has proven himself to know more about pop culture than anyone else I have ever known. So we are very honored to have you, sir, on as our guest.
So
thank you very much. I'm so honored to be here. Finally, putting these like useless skills to use.
I don't think they're useless. I love them all. I would like to know how you became this incredible encyclopedia of pop culture knowledge.
You know, I don't know. I think I've just been like watching TV and movies and music, and actually, like, since my mom gave me like a Fisher Price record player when I was like 4 years old, I got like immersed in music, and I think we were the first house on the block to get cable. So I've like been watching TV and listening to music and watching movies nonstop my whole life.
And I think, and I'll say that I think your having older siblings is a pivotal part of your pop culture knowledge, because I think so many people's pop culture knowledge begins the year that they started listening to music. But I feel like you have a great knowledge of stuff that happened like 10, 20 years before you were even in diapers.
You're right. It's like an advantage, because like I remember my sister took me to the drive-thru to see, my sister is 13 years older than me, and she took me to the drive-in movie theater to see Purple Rain. I think I was like 6 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. Which I was fully immersed in this movie, but looking back, I think it was a little inappropriate, and my mom probably should have put a stop to it.
Oh, a print education at age six. Wow.
Yeah. I later realized that those lyrics are way beyond me.
Probably scarred for the better.
Right. That Lake Minnetonka scene.
Oh.
Probably shouldn't have seen that.
Probably not.
FYI, that's not Lake Minnetonka.
Yeah, really.
So tell us a little bit about your role as a senior producer on a syndicated talk show like The Wendy Williams Show.
Well, I produce the 20-minute plus segment every day called Hot Topics. And basically, it really, I guess it utilizes my skills as a pop culture. Can I call myself a genius? Sure. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I will.
Yes, you are.
I will. Basically, I research stories and decide what gossip stories we want to do for the next day, run them by Wendy, see what's the funniest, what she likes the most, what she has the most to say about, and then, you know, that goes on the air.
And then so there's all this preparation you do. And then I think, you know, some people think that research is about, oh, weeks and weeks and weeks of research. But for you, you basically wake up at some ungodly hour and all of that research happens in what, just a couple of hours?
And just a couple hours. 5 a.m. I wake up. I start to watch the previous night's Entertainment Tonight and the overnight news. And I'm instantly on TMZ and the Daily Mail and
wow,
all those websites and stuff. And it's not just me. It's like a team of six people. But I'd like to think that I'm the most important.
I believe it. I believe it. And I do want to ask you one thing. So unlike most producers, you are of a very, very unique breed of producer who actually appears on camera more times than not, right?
Yes.
So what is that like? You know, you're someone who chose to be behind the scenes. Producers, I feel like they're like, I am dedicated to being behind the scenes. And then all of a sudden, now you are, at least for Hot Topics, somewhat of a co-host where you're chiming in, you're throwing some additional information at Wendy, she's asking you for your opinion.
Right.
So what is that like as a producer to all of a sudden be on-air talent?
Terrifying. being on-air, like you know her, like you don't know, you know, what she's going to say or when she's going to say it. And so she just throws the ball at you and you got to catch it and do something and throw it right back. But it's kind of like a more involved Michael Gelman from the Kelly and Ryan show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm the black Michael Gelman. Blowman.
I love it.
Yeah.
Blowman.
No, but she's like, you know, our conversations during the briefings sort of spill over into the live show. So, okay. And she's a one-woman show, and so she can't have a conversation by herself. So oftentimes, she'll bring me into it and make me say some shady thing I said off camera that I now have to say on live television.
What's the shadiest thing she made you say?
Oh, recently I said that I refused to see the On the Run 2 tour. Beyonce and Jay-Z tour, because basically it was a carbon copy of the On the Run 1 tour.
Ooh.
And the Beehive sort of swarmed me.
Uh-huh. I bet they would.
Yeah, they found my Instagram and just started filling my Instagram comments with bees. So I thank them for that.
You've recovered from all the stings.
Yeah.
Well, Amit and I want to thank you on behalf of all the producers, because I feel like it's nice to have a producer giving a face to what producers do and who they are. So I think you represent us really well. Thank you, Mr. Baker.
You do.
Thank you. So nice.
So we're here to kind of talk about you, but really what we want to talk about is TV, which you are really a genius about. And so this is our fall TV special. So we want to talk about, we're going to talk about the shows you're looking forward to a little bit later in the show. But first, we're happy to put you on the spot, and we want to hear some big, bold, bad Emmy predictions.
Yes. You know, this is what I live for.
I know.
All year long, I like make up in my head what I want the nominees to be and who I want to win. So I'm up to the task.
Okay.
Yay.
So we asked you to think about like a couple of like really interesting categories that maybe these might be the categories that people like. These are the categories that are going to clinch your Emmy pool win, right? And,
okay.
And Norman's here to guide us through them.
Well, let's start with the big one: Outstanding Comedy Series. Those nominees are Atlanta on FX, Barry on HBO, Blackish on ABC. Curb Your Enthusiasm on HBO, Glow on Netflix, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon, which is incredible. Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley? Silicon Valley on HBO.
Silicon. Yeah.
Yeah. And The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix.
Wow.
That's
a good category.
And it's really eight category. Nominees.
Uh-huh.
And usually the last 3 years, I think the winner has been Veep, but for like terrible reasons, it's not eligible this season. So it's up for grabs, and it could go to anybody. And I'm guessing, should I tell you who should win or who will win?
I want to hear both.
Yeah.
Okay. I think who will win is Atlanta on FX. I think it's got a lot of momentum. I think everybody, like, Donald Glover is now a triple threat. He's probably going to EGOT probably by next year. But everybody's behind the show. It's got a lot of nominations. His co-stars are nominated. It's just a hot, buzzy show right now. So I think that's it's going to take it. Who should win? Ooh. I'm going to say it's The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon.
Interesting.
I had a feeling you might say that.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I haven't seen the show, nor has Amita, correct?
No, I've seen The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Oh, you have?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, I did.
So,
it was
can you
really
two
fun.
Inform me what is so marvelous, sorry, about the show? I apologize.
I would just say it's all encapsulated in Rachel Brosnahan, who's Mrs. Maisel, who is the star. She is just a force on the screen. Witty, clever, cute, hilarious, speed talking. It's what is it? Amy Sherman-Palladino, I believe, which is she's one of the creators of Gilmore Girls. And if you remember the cadence of Lorelai and Rory in Gilmore Girls, you get that same really quick, lots of language. There's a lot.
So many words. They have to say in a quick time.
Yeah, but it's she's quirky, but she's fun, and she's got gumption, and it's based in the 50s, which is like this great time capsule as well, on the Upper West Side, which is cool too to see like them recreate the Upper West Side in the 50s.
And female empowerment.
Yes.
Yeah, it's got a good message, good timely message, and most of all, it's really funny and really really well written.
But it's interesting in your picks for both for Atlanta and Mrs. Maisel, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I feel like it's the diversity that we've all been demanding lately, but also the female empowerment that we've all been demanding. So it almost seems like, who are you guys going to choose, the black show or the female show?
Right.
Yeah.
Make a choice. Although it's interesting this year because for African-American television, first of all, it's an embarrassment of riches this season. Mm-hmm. But Atlanta and Blackish are both nominated, which, it's only something like 10-year-old Norman would have dreamed about.
Right.
Two black shows in the same category. And we didn't even mention Insecure, which is fantastic.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. And Issa Rae is nominated for Insecure, so that's also really exciting.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, I completely stand for Atlanta all the time. I love that show. I think it's so innovative and different and funny, but dramatic at the same time. Like, if Teddy Perkins does not get a win for direction and whatever else is involved, the writing of Teddy Perkins, like, that episode standalone was phenomenal. It's so interesting because it's like a subversive comedy, and when you look at it against something like a Blackish or a Curb Your Enthusiasm or even Marvelous Mrs. Maisel in this category, it seems a little like it feels more drama sometimes than comedy, but it's always submitted as comedy, and we'll see what happens.
So what's the next category you find intriguing?
I guess the next biggie is Best Drama Series. And that, the nominees are Game of Thrones on HBO, Stranger Things on Netflix, The Americans on FX, The Crown on Netflix, The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, This Is Us on NBC, and Westworld on HBO.
Powerful category. Yeah.
A tough category.
So tough. And I like all these shows, maybe except for, actually, I haven't ever seen The Americans. Please don't hang up on
Neither
me. Please
have
don't.
I.
Please
no,
don't
no,
kick
no.
me off.
On my list, too. It's one of the things I'm embarrassed I haven't seen that show.
Same. And I'm coming off 4 weeks of hiatus. And like, my goal was to watch The Americans, and I just didn't. I just didn't have the time. I just got the time. There's so much television.
So much.
So who I think will win is obviously Game of Thrones.
Interesting.
Last year they weren't eligible, but this year they're nominated for like 800,000 awards.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to take it. Everybody likes a good dragon, including me. I'm not hating. I love a dragon or two, especially a zombie dragon.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love a zombie? I will say, when the dragon became a zombie, it was maybe the craziest thing that ever happened on television.
Yes.
And there was a lot of, like, emotional investment in it, too. Like, I was, like, destroyed by that. I dreamed about it. I couldn't get it out of my mind. It was...
There is nothing good about a zombie dragon. This spells horror.
Nothing good can come from this.
No.
Westeros horror story. It's happening.
Sean, have you updated your Game of Thrones song to involve zombie dragons?
No, I'm working on those lyrics now. So we'll premiere that when Game of Thrones comes back on. But but do you think that the fact that we haven't seen Game of Thrones for a year, do you think that hurts them at all? Or I guess you're saying, no, it doesn't hurt them at all.
Well, I think it doesn't help them, mm-hmm. but the show is so big in scope and so expensive and so, like, huge that Emmy voters aren't going to just forget about it.
Gotcha.
Well, I would love to counter with, do you think that maybe because they know the last season's coming out next year, this might be the year that a show like The Americans, which is its final season, might get a chance? Or, you know, the winner of last year, The Handmaid's Tale, which is incredible television, might get a second award.
See, I think you're right. Like, The Handmaid's Tale, mm-hmm. I think, is my should win.
Ooh.
And I think it has a good chance to win. If there's like a dark horse, it's either The Handmaid's Tale or the big network show, which is This Is Us.
Oh, which, please, This Is Us.
I mean, the Super Bowl and the fire and all that.
My heart
great.
That show.
But again, like, This Is Us, I think, suffers from the fact that we haven't seen it in a while. Mm-hmm. And the big fire episode that everybody talked about, the big buzzy episode, is like so far away. Mm-hmm. But The Handmaid's Tale is a great show, fantastic show, and also like culturally relevant.
Yes, yes.
More
also,
than we
female
want it to
leads.
Be.
More than female leads.
Right. But I will say, The Handmaid's Tale is really, really dark.
Yeah.
And super depressing, and a lot of people had a lot of complaints about how dark and depressing it was.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I'll admit to you too that I am still only 5 or 6 episodes into it. It was so frigging depressing and dark and hard, and it felt cruel to my eyeballs that I stopped watching it. And
a lot of the characters' eyeballs.
And a lot of characters' eyeballs. So true. Sad but true. So, I mean, I will finish it, but not
it's
anytime
hard.
Soon. Not before the Emmys.
I've heard a lot of people say the same thing. They liken it to torture porn, and that is, that's tough. It's a tough thing to watch, but when you do, there's some incredible... I love to watch it just for the quality of it, the quality of the music choices they make in the show, the quality of the lighting, and the cinematography of the show is incredible, too. And then Elizabeth Moss, she did like almost a whole episode without speaking, and it was incredible, you know? So it's more of, I think, just the production of the show that I really, really enjoy.
Elizabeth Moss is so good in it. She's so good.
So good.
I love her.
So good. At some point in the future, we'd love to have you on for a best episodes of all time show. And she, spoiler alert, is in one of what I think is one of the best episodes of in TV history.
I know this about you.
This will happen. This will happen. we haven't mentioned any Netflix shows as winners. Netflix has the most nominations for the first time in Emmy's history, more than HBO. Do you think this is the year that Netflix is going to ascend in the awards categories, or do you think that HBO will still pull it out and get more wins? What do you think Netflix is going to show up and do this year?
Well, unfortunately, I know they have the most nominations, but I don't predict a lot of wins for them. HBO and Game of Thrones. HBO has Game of Thrones. And as far as streaming goes, Hulu has The Handmaid's Tale, and Amazon has Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. So it's possible that comedy and drama could go to streaming, but neither will be Netflix.
Interesting. So interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe that speaks, and it's not like Netflix isn't doing quality programming, but maybe it does speak to, you know what, make like 4,000 shows, and yeah, you'll have some good ones, but focus on 3 amazing shows, and you'll win some Emmys. Yeah.
I do believe that Queer Eye on Netflix is nominated, and I do think,
yes,
I think it's nominated for like structured reality mm-hmm. program.
It's nominated
without a host, with you know, like
no, it's just structured reality series.
Yeah.
But it's up against some veterans. Like everybody else in the category has been nominated before in this thing. They're the newbies.
Uh-huh.
They're up against like Shark Tank, Fixer Upper, Lip Sync Battle, Antiques Roadshow, and Who Do You Think You Are?
Yeah. Well, so, I do think they have a lot of buzz.
They do. They do. I hope they win.
Antiques Roadshow is like always the winner, but it's time to say goodbye.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Antiques Roadshow in 20 years. Yeah. But I mean, you know, no shade. No shade to the people at Antiques Roadshow and PBS, but everyone's talking about how great Queer Eye is.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think even if it wasn't as great as it is, and it is great, I think just Emmy, I feel like there are statements that Emmy likes to make, and to see the Fab Five run to the front of the stage and accept their award and probably make some powerful moving speeches, I think that's a moment that the Emmy committee wants, I think that people want to see. So I think they have a really good chance.
Yeah.
I think so too.
Yeah. My fingers are crossed.
Yeah. One of my favorite categories, I love categories that are kind of like immensely stacked, and I was looking through the nominees, and Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series is no joke this year, guys. No joke. This is the list of women that are supporting actress nominees: Betty Gilpin in Glow, Leslie Jones in Saturday Night Live, Kate McKinnon in Saturday Night Live, Laurie Metcalf on Roseanne, Megan Mullally on Will and Grace, Alex Borstein in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Zazie Beetz in Atlanta, and Aidy Bryant in Saturday Night Live.
Unbelievable.
I don't even know.
First of all, is there an actress on television not nominated in this category?
I mean, yeah, there's a lot. There's 8 in this category. It's crazy.
No, all these people are fantastic.
I know.
Okay, this is a controversial choice, but if you know me, you know what I'm going to say. Icon Laurie Metcalf should win, even though it's from a show that I hope, you know, I wish there was a way it could win nothing.
Yes.
But I don't think Laurie Metcalf or John Goodman should be penalized for what Roseanne tweeted. Uh-huh. Yeah. But I do think Laurie Metcalf is an icon and a genius, and I want her to win everything she's nominated for.
I love her so much, and she got, unfortunately, did not get the Oscar for Lady Bird. So uh-huh. It would be nice for her to win a trophy for something she's done this year, because she's done exceptional work this year. But Kate McKinnon and everything on SNL to me, especially Jeff Sessions, is just life. It's life.
But she won last year, didn't she?
Yeah.
So I just feel like spread it out, right? Like let Laurie Metcalf win, let Aidy Bryant win, or Leslie Jones win, or mm-hmm. yeah. It's when the category is that good, it's like, yeah, just spread it out.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if Leslie Jones wins, it would be the best. Holy crap. I would love it if Leslie Jones won.
Oh my gosh. She would love it. Can you imagine her on that stage?
She would just be screaming on the stage.
I can't wait.
Nothing subtle will happen if she wins.
Nothing.
She's not going to give a Merritt Weaver.
Right.
Thank you, bye.
Yeah.
Speaking of Saturday Night Live, what do you think about the hosts, Norman? How do you think Colin Jost and Michael Che are going to do as hosts for the Emmys?
I think they'll do just fine. I like them a lot. I like them both a lot. But I'm trying to put this diplomatically. Like, I don't like the too cool for school attitude. So if you're going to host the Emmys, then I think you should embrace what it is. And not, I think, I predict that they probably will, I don't know, like I don't know, throw shade at the industry and throw shade at the nominees and whatever. So I just want them to sort of embrace it and be like playful hosts like Jimmy Kimmel or Seth Meyers and less like Ricky Gervais.
Got it.
That makes any sense.
Yeah, I feel that.
I like that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, anything else you're interested about or excited about?
I actually am excited, hopefully, maybe, to have Tracee Ellis Ross walk on stage. Maybe, hopefully.
Yes.
Even though she's against Issa Rae, the last African-American woman to win lead actress in a comedy was Weezy Jefferson back in the 80s. So it's kind of a shameful record on the Emmys part that I'd like to see corrected.
And Weezy deserved that Emmy, may I say. But
100%.
Yes. But yeah.
She was moving on up.
George. And listen, I watched, I think, every episode of Black-ish this year, and she had an amazing season. She dealt with postpartum depression. She dealt with the disintegration of a 20-year marriage. And this is a comedy we're talking about. She was astounding this season, so I would love to see her win. And she's just one of the most delightful creatures in pop culture. She's just... she's great at award shows. She's great on the covers of fashion magazine. She's great on Instagram. She really is making a big effort to be a national treasure. And I would say I'm ready to dub her a national treasure.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's do it. She's an icon.
All right. Well, should we talk about some fall TV, some future Emmy nominees, perhaps? There's way too much TV to watch. I'm already overwhelmed. So, Norman, we're going to rely on you to tell us the shows that you are most excited about. And those are the ones I'm going to watch.
Ooh. Okay.
You're going to be the boss of us.
I feel like that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
So much pressure.
First of all, I know everybody's sick of the reboots, but let's just get one more in there. And it's Murphy Brown.
Yes.
On CBS. I think I'm the most excited for that.
Damn.
Not a lot is known about what the show is going to be. We haven't really seen, like, a lot. They don't have any, like, during the upfronts, they didn't have a lot of scenes to show us. But what better show to bring back in our politically charged climate than Murphy Brown, who, you know, took down Dan Quayle. She took on Dan Quayle back in the day. So I'm sure lots of Trump jokes will be had on the show, and I look forward to it. I love Candace Bergen. Speaking of national treasures,
she's such a treasure. I saw a poster for Murphy Brown on a bus, and I swear to you, I just got super excited. I almost like jumped up and down just seeing it, meaning that it was happening. It got me so excited.
I used to watch Murphy Brown every night before bed as a kid. Oh. And it was like my mom let me have a TV in my room, so that explains a lot. But put Murphy Brown on, and I don't know, have a little tea, and kick it on the bed. Yeah, so Murphy Brown was my favorite, so I'm excited for that. There's a show on ABC called A Million Little Things.
Yeah.
It's I think it's ABC's answer to This Is Us. It's you know, it's I think we're gonna go back from past to present to flashbacks and stuff, and a group of friends. It's about a group of friends who reunite after one friend dies. So, and then we see the relationships between the friends.
Is it like a big chill, but now?
Yeah, exactly. But it's even got like a This Is Us type soundtrack in the ads. It's like a acoustic guitar, like folksy guitar. I can already tell it's going to pull at my heartstrings. So, Sean, you know that the best network of all time is the WB.
I do know that you believe that.
So hear me out.
AKA the CW now?
Yeah, it's a CW. It hasn't been the same since it became the CW.
Of course.
But back when it was the WB, you had Buffy, you had Angel, you had Dawson's Creek, you had Felicity, and Gilmore Girls and Charmed, and it was a perfect network. So now they had, the CW has a show called All American, and it's about a high school football player, like he's from Crenshaw, and he gets recruited to play for the Beverly Hills team. So he goes to Beverly Hills. So you go back and forth from his life in Crenshaw at home to his life at school in Beverly Hills and how he has to deal with that. And it just looks like it's like Friday Night Lights meets, I don't know, 90210. And yeah, there was an old sitcom starring Lawrence Tate back in the day called South Central. And it reminds me of this. Yeah. So yeah, I'm definitely down for this. It's like teens in the hood and rich teens. I'm down. I think I'm actually probably most excited about that one.
I've never heard of that before, so I'm excited to check it out.
Yeah.
And as Sean promised, he's going to.
Anything Norman tells him to do, I'm doing.
You must watch.
You must watch it. I hadn't heard about it either, but I'm excited to watch that. I am. There's only one thing I watch on the CW, and that is The Wonderful Jane the Virgin. And so
such a good show.
So good. So I'm looking forward to this All-American. I didn't know about it.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Those are my picks.
I'm ready. Like, again, you haven't... I like that you've picked stuff from traditional television networks, right? Like, you're not giving us a lot of trendy streaming platforms, which I like. I appreciate that.
You're right. I think there's something to be said about old-school fall television and, like, that, you know, that premiere week where everybody just throws all these shows at you and
your
DVR goes crazy. Or back in the day, your VHS... And like, like yell at my mom, right? Yell at my mom, you forgot the tape, Roseanne. Right.
So good.
Right. But I like premiere week on the networks.
Me too.
So I'm excited. Yeah.
So can you tell our listeners, I don't know if you can help them out, because I think we're all overwhelmed with peak TV. What is your strategy, Norman? How are you aware of so many shows? Do you sample everything? Do you have 8 DVRs? What is your strategy in like knowing about all these shows?
Well, number one, I have a DVR that can record up to 6 things at once. So that's number one.
Got it.
Thanks, Spectrum.
But also, I listen to great podcasts like this one. Mm-hmm. And... I just try to stay connected. Entertainment Weekly and, you know, my newspapers and stuff. I, you know, just try to stay plugged in. But my strategy is just record as much as I can, cable and network and streaming. And even if you binge something, like, it's okay to, like, binge a little bit at a time. You don't have to just sit through and watch everything at once, even if you like watch a couple episodes of Orange is the New Black and then watch something else and come back around, you know, you'll hit everything. Yeah.
All right, cool.
Have like a formula, like, you know, a cutoff if you start a new show, like I give it 3 episodes and if I'm not feeling it, I drop it? Or do you give it a little bit longer or a little bit less?
I feel like I know right away. Like, you know what I mean? Like 2 episodes, 3 episodes, sometimes 1, like, you know when you know. A lot of unlucky shows have been dropped by me, but I don't think I want to name them here, but, if a show isn't, if it's putting you to sleep every time you turn it on or, if you're not feeling the characters or if it's like instantly offensive, I'm looking at you, some of you Netflix shows about overweight women. Oh. I won't name names.
Okay. We won't name names.
Right. You know, in the era of peak TV, you don't have a lot of time.
Yep.
To, tell me about
it. Yeah. Not a lot of time for mediocrity.
Word.
Ain't nobody got the time for this.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
So we just want to ask you, Norman, obviously you are someone who has succeeded in loving pop culture and working in pop culture. What are some of your influences? Like, are there TV shows or producers who you feel inspired you to work in TV, to do what you do?
Huh, where do I begin? First of all, the great Oprah Winfrey was my first teacher. Arsenio Hall. when I was a kid, I wanted to be Arsenio Hall.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the greatest late night shows of all time. It was a show that like spoke to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually, what attracted me to the Wendy Williams show is I saw in this show what I saw in Arsenio.
Okay.
It's a show for urban youth.
Mm-hmm.
And it had its finger on the pulse of what's hot and what's current. And it had a really unique host. It's a show that I instantly was like, oh, that's a show I need to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
It's I want to be a part of this train.
Well, Norman, thank you so much for coming on to give us your take on who's definitely going to win the Emmys.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I listen to this podcast all the time and I talk back to it like in my brain and then walking down because it's, you know, it's my friends talking. I want to talk back. And so finally I have this opportunity to chime in.
And Norman, for people who want more Norman Baker, how can they follow you on social media or throughout life?
You can follow me on Instagram at Normaker, N-O-R-M-M-A-K-E-R, and same name on Twitter. But I'm mostly an Instagram guy because, you know, I'm visual and you got to see this face.
You got to see this face, guys. Yeah.
Okay, and then of course we can see you and your work on Wendy Williams every day, Monday through Friday.
Yeah, check your local listings, syndicated. Yeah.
All right, thank you so much, Norman.
Thank you, guys.
We'll be back after these short messages. Listen, we already know that you love genre movies, film craft, and female filmmakers. So, if you love all those things, then by transitive property, you love my podcast, Switchblade Sisters. Hi, I'm film critic April Wolf. Every week, I have a conversation with a different female filmmaker about their favorite genre film. Each episode covers the filmmaking process, working in the film industry, and just like general geeking out about awesome movies. I've had such great guests like the Big Sick writer, Emily Gordon.
To me, indie movies as of late have come to be a catch-all term for a movie that kind of defies genre.
Billy Madison and Half-Baked director, Tamara Davis.
When a comedian comes and enters onto my set, they're just there to be funny, and we're all ready and waiting for them to be funny.
Horror industry veteran and actor, Barbara Crampton.
That's where real drama lies for me. What's between you and I speaking right now? Where are we meeting? And what's the energy that we create between us?
And so many others. So check out Switchblade Sisters every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, we'd like to talk to you about our new podcast on Maximum Fun, Friendly Fire.
It's the podcast about action movies and Sylvester Stallone specifically. It's the show I've always wanted to make.
It is not that. It is not that at all.
It's a little bit more of a war movie podcast.
It's not a little bit more of a war movie podcast. It is explicitly a war movie podcast. We look at them from all sides and put them in a variety of cultural and historical contexts such that anyone is going to enjoy this show.
So go grab Friendly Fire every Friday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
Now it's time for our favorite final segment of the podcast called The Big Sell. For those of you who are new to us, The Big Sell is our segment every single episode where we sell something we're enjoying in pop culture to the other person. So if I'm enjoying something on TV or a song or a documentary of some sort, I'll say, Sean, hey, you know what? I love this. You should check it out. And then Sean will check it out and come back following episode and say, you know what? I checked it out. This is what I think. And we have a really fun 4-star rating system, a la Star Search, for those of you who may not know it.
So that is the description, the hypothetical, theoretical description of what The Big Sell is. But in actuality, all of that did just happen. Amita, last time on the show, recommended a song by a group called Ebay. I know the group. I love them. I've taken a deep dive into their music. And I actually discovered, Amita, that I did know and love the song River that you big sold to me. That's fine, because you also big sold the music video, which I had never seen. So I'm here to, yeah, let's just talk about Abeille for a while. So Ubik sold Abeille to me because they are primarily because they're playing at Afropunk, and I had sold Jacob Banks to you a few episodes ago, and he's also playing at Afropunk, and we had just been so excited for Afropunk that we were on our Afropunk tip. And Abeille, they are a group comprised of two twin sisters, and their music, I would describe their music as mellow, soulful, introspective. I think of Abeille in a very positive way of two young women exploring their world, their lives, their inner thoughts, and their outer experiences. And they just make really beautiful melodic music. They remind me a little bit of Saint Beauty, and they're on the Wonderland label. We saw them open for Janelle Monáe. I mean, there's just like that long list of like very, very kind of mellow, cool female singers singing over cool mellow music, right? Sade, right? Like, I feel like Sade gave birth to Saint Beauty and Abeille, and they're all trying to hold that torch in some way that Sade initially lit. So love them, love Abeille, and thank you for big selling this music video that I'd never seen.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you got a chance to listen to Abeille, and I'm so glad that you already knew about them before I did this. Some fun facts about them: they actually were in the Lemonade visual album. They were sitting in a tree. They were sitting on the steps in the Lemonade feature, which I didn't know. I knew their music before I knew that, which is kind of amazing. So they're on Beyonce's radar, which is already fantastic. And as I said last week, they have these French-Cuban roots. Their dad was in the Buena Vista Social Club. They have a musical background. And what I love about their music is that kind of African-Cuban feeling to some of their sounds. You know, it's there's some folk in there, but it's Latin folk, but also soulful. And I feel like that makes their sound super unique.
I agree with everything that you said. And they're also visual artists, because I have looked at a few of their music videos now because of your big sell. And I'll say that The River, one of the things that I really like about this music video is that it has what I see as a sense of humor. Essentially, the music video is a close-up of their two faces. Their two faces happen to be submerged underwater, and they're holding their breath, and they're taking turns delivering verses and singing the chorus. And when the one twin isn't singing, she's underwater holding her breath. I think it's a really cool look, and I think there's a sense of humor about it as well, which I like.
That's so interesting. I didn't think about the humor in it, because I felt like you can see there's like a hand holding, they're both in white, and there's a hand holding like right above their, like right below their neck, and like kind of bringing them up and pushing them down very, very gracefully, not violently. And so I felt like it was like this cleansing baptism feeling to their song. And the way they did that in the video brought this extra level to The River, the actual lyrics of that song. And that's what I felt from it.
Oh, yeah. I totally get that, too. I'm definitely down with that. Yeah. And I would say what you're describing, first and foremost, there, like for me, there was another level of just, if humor is not the right word to use, maybe it's kind of meta, like the fact, like the self-awareness that we know that we're making a video where we're alternating holding our breath, like we're owning that, and like think about that. And also think about the song and the meaning. Yeah, so that was cool to me. And I love at the end, they're chanting. And the only word I can make out is Oshun, who is a Yoruba goddess of life and rejuvenation. But water is what connects her. I studied a little bit about Yoruban culture and the gods. So that was really interesting to me, that it seemed like they kept saying Oshun, 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 and it really kind of reconfirmed and emphasized what they were saying earlier in the song with the lyrics and the water imagery. So I really loved it, and I loved it so much, I'm going to give it three 5 stars.
Love it. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It's really cool. Also, it's so interesting because one of the sisters can open her eyes and be like dead stare under the water, and it is so impressive to me. The other sister did not, but it doesn't matter. It's still impressive to me.
Yeah. And it makes me think about some music videos that are at their most simple, but are the most powerful. Mm-hmm. Like you think about, I think the example that first comes to my mind, Amita, is Sinead O'Connor's cover of yes. Prince, Nothing Compares to You. It's just her face. It's her kind of, you know, pale complexion against a black backdrop. But I think, yeah, they're really good examples of very, very, very simple music videos that are powerful like that.
Yeah. And then there's always like the great, there's a lot of really fun videos that just do like just one shot, which seems like, oh, that's simple, but, you know, maybe taking the easy way out, but they're not. Like, it's actually much more difficult to kind of accomplish everything that they're accomplishing in one long take. You know, Coldplay's first video ever, Yellow, mm-hmm. where Chris Martin is just like walking on a beach towards the camera, brings that memory back too. So yeah, it's a fun video.
Yeah. So they're definitely a group that I want to see more of. I want to see them live again. I want to hear more music from them. They're really wonderful. I think they're two special, talented women. And yeah, I look forward to more from Ibeyi. So thank you for that big sell.
You're welcome. Thank you for that wonderful rating. What do you have to sell to me this week, Mr. Johnson?
Well, Amita, Afropunk may be over, but in my heart and in my earbuds, it's still going on. So I would love to big sell to you another Afropunk artist.
I love it. Bring it.
Okay, and he has something in common with a number of other big sells that we've had on the show. But I'd like to big sell to you an artist called Fantastic Negrito. He is someone who you hear him and you think, oh man, he's going to sound really amazing live. I would say beyond how amazing he is live, you sit down and you listen to an album and it's just really great recorded music as well. So I would love to big sell to you his album, the album that really made me fall in love with his music. And it's really one of my favorite album titles ever. It's called Please Don't Be Dead.
Great title.
Please Don't Be Dead.
I love it.
And yeah, so find that on Spotify or Pandora, wherever you listen to your music. We know it's Spotify. And I would say, like Jacob Banks, like Leon Bridges, like a few other artists we've spoken about, he's definitely embracing old school soul, right? Soul music.
Love it.
And I think with him though, it's soul music with a definite kind of rockabilly blues edge. So guitar is the main instrument in most of his music. And he, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you could say, I hear a little bit of James Brown. I hear a little bit of Little Richard. A lot of Little Richard, I think, because of the guitar. But also, again, completely original in the same way. So I look forward to hearing what you think about Fantastic Negrito, Please Don't Be Dead.
Such a good title. Yeah, I'm looking forward to listening to this album. I knew just a couple of his tracks, previous tracks, but I have not listened to the new music. So I am excited to discover more about him.
Awesome, 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 awesome. All right, well, we have reached the end of another Fantastic Negrito episode. So, everyone, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. If you enjoyed the show, keep in touch with us throughout the week and continue the enjoyment. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders. You can like us on Facebook, search Inside Pop and find us on Facebook. And of course, you can visit our official website. It's all official at InsidePopPodcast.com, where you can officially subscribe. You can officially go to the About tab and find a little bit about us. You can officially listen to some old episodes. We've covered so many topics in the past 2.5 years. There's something there for everyone. So yeah, do a little archive search and see what we were up to in the past.
Yes. And to even be even more official, you can go over to MaximumFun.org and listen to additional podcasts dedicated to comedy and culture. We're so proud to be part of this network and hope you visit us there as well.
We have a great episode coming up next time. We had the chance to speak to music supervisor extraordinaire Matthew Heron-Smith. Matt has been the music supervisor for amazing films like Tangerine, The Florida Project, and he's also been the music supervisor for a number of incredible television shows, I'm saying it, like My House on Viceland, which really relied on having an amazing music supervisor to bring that scene and those dance moments alive. So if you're wondering, what exactly does a music supervisor do? What choices do they make? How do they choose songs? This is the episode to listen to. So we're going to speak to one of the experts in the field to give you the ins and outs and the ABCs and a deep dive into how music plays a really integral role in all of your favorite TV and film projects.
That's it for us. So have a great week, y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.